Accession number 10693, Rule 3.
Colonel Norman, Rule 3. You mentioned being education officer. What were the duties of the education officer?
Simply to supervise. Really, you didn't have to do any teaching. It was simply a supervision of classes. He made sure the right people were in the right place, as far as I can remember. I don't think the only reason I was made education officer, I imagine, probably is because I went to Cambridge and the other ones didn't. It was usually a job for someone who was in headquarter company, I think, which I was once or twice, but mostly, I think it, when I was an ordinary platoon commander, I still do it, I think. I did actually do some teaching when I was at the School of Education, and they used to bring raw recruits along to for us to practice on. And some of them I can remember were very raw. I had one illiterate once who couldn't read or write or even sign his name, I remember, having to try and teach him. Pretty difficult.
Did the scope of your duties as education officer cover the officers as well as the
no.
other ranks?
No. Oh, no. No.
What were the general aims of the educational policy you were putting into effect?
I really think, really, not much more. Well, yes, there were categories, weren't there? You had to pass certain tests to improve your pay. And I can't remember what they were, but that was the object, to get these chaps up to that standard.
So it was basic primary education?
Oh, yes. Yes, it wasn't anything very advanced about education in the army. It was just really to get chaps up to sufficient standard to be good soldiers.
Did you have anything to do with NCO training as well? With educating them?
Not that I can recollect specifically. I think everybody was sort of in the training program, everybody was being educated for something or other, but I don't think one actually taught NCOs anything except in toots and things like that. But scholastically, no. I must say it wasn't a job I ever liked, being education officer.
What was the general state of discipline like in the 1st Battalion when you were at Blacktown?
Jolly good. There was an awful lot of minor offences, of course, went on. But, no, the discipline was super. We had a... In the 1st Battalion, we had a very fine adjutant, terribly nice man, but really very strict, but terribly good with it. And you could get a rocket from him with absolutely no grudge about it at all, and still remain absolutely top, terrific friends. Frightfully nice man. He was run over about 12 years ago, I suppose. He was one of two brothers, both of whom were adjutants, and both commanded both battalions, both regular battalions at various times. The elder brother is still alive, but I haven't seen him for a long time. He must be nearly 90, I suppose.
You say you get a rocket. Would this take the form of a verbal reprimand?
Yes, yes.
What sort of thing would you get that for?
Being sloppily dressed, or badly turned out, or overreaching the mark in some way or another. I can remember getting a rocket in China, I think. We were having some very, very bad rains. We were flooded, actually. The barracks were flooded. And I put on a Macintosh in order to go from one part of the barracks to another, and it wasn't very far, but it was pouring with rain. And instead of putting it on properly, I had it over my shoulders. Got a rocket for that.
How would he deliver this rocket?
But it wasn't the same adjutant. That was another one who was far more Prussian. This one, he would probably say, "Look, Oscar, you simply can't walk about looking like that." And that would be it. The other one would probably say exactly the same thing, but not quite so nicely. We didn't go in for any severities at all.
You said there was a lot of minor crime. What were the prevalent minor offences?
Drinking too much, late back from whatever it is, bad kit inspection, something like that. Nothing serious at all.
How were these things dealt with? Was there a formal company orders?
Or oh yes, oh yes, certainly did that, and everybody had to attend and stand up behind the county commander while it was dealt with. Hats off, left, right, left, right, left, right, alt, that sort of business.
What sort of punishments were handed out for these minor
or CBE? Later I got involved in, when I was joined the 2nd Battalion, I had never attended a court-martial, and there any up in, it's detachment at Dealali actually, and I suppose there weren't too many officers, and there was a crime. Two soldiers had been accused of spying on a wife of a sergeant when she was dressing or undressing or having a bath or something like that, and I was the only person available, I suppose, and I was told to defend these two chaps, never having attended a court-martial, which is strictly wrong. You're supposed to be under instruction, I think, for two court-martials before you were ever asked to take part in one. Anyway, I did, and by sheer chance, I got them off.
How did you manage that?
I'm blamed if I can remember. Conduct of the prejudice of military order and good what is it, military order and discipline, whatever it was. There was a charge, Section 40 of the Army Act. Fancy remembering that. And anyway, I did, and it really was a terrible thing to have done from my point of view, because then from then on, I was always asked to defend, even from people in other regiments. And I did actually, at one time, do quite a sensational rape case and got them off that. And it got worse, so until I became adjutant. Then, of course, I did the prosecutions, which was even worse, I thought.
Did your transfer from one side of the line to the other have a dramatic impact on the number of convictions?
No, I don't think so.
When men were on CB, what did this mean?
Oh, I think extra drill and confined to barracks. We had an awfully little crime, really, I suppose. It seems to me that we did. When I was commanding a 6th Battalion, we never had any at all. Mind you, of course, they weren't all volunteers. They were largely national servicemen. And in Korea, none at all that I can remember.
When you were down at Blackdown again, what did you do when you were off duty? What were the recreations available?
Well, a lot of the... You were talking about the officers.
Yes, and the men as well. But
well, of course, in our battalion, it was a terrific lot of football. From being Geordies from Durham, football was a religion, practically. I, having come from a football school, was told to play football one day, and it was an absolute disaster. It wasn't the same game at all. So I never played anymore. But what I did do, because I'm useless at games anyhow, really, and what I did do was to become an army football referee. And it was quite a stiff exam, written and practical. Really, quite a stiff exam. And you had to get a very high percentage of marks. Well over 80, I'm sure it was. I think it might, yes, it was. So I did a bit of that, but that wasn't until I got to India. What else did they? They played cricket and boxing. There's a lot of boxing going on. And competitions of various games were always going on. And that, I must say, certainly in India, I don't think it was very good. There was champion company competition. Caused an awful lot of bad blood, and sometimes initiated by the county commanders. Like, I mean, one particular county commander, who in fact was a New Zealander, and he was so enthusiastic and patriotic about his chauvinistic about his company, that he really wasn't on speaking terms with his chief opponent, and it was absolutely ludicrous. And I thought did a lot of harm. That was in India. And all games, all sports were included in the champion company competition. That took up a lot of spare time energy. And there was rugby, of course, too. A lot of the officers played rugby. And in India, hockey was a great game. And then in India, also polo for the officers. But I had a... It was near London, Blackdown. I had a motor car. And I had a home in London. And I was always whizzing off up there. Very easy to get to, very easy to come back. In those days, no traffic blocks or anything like that. You would come straight back at dawn and go on parade.
Did you work on Saturdays?
Yes, I think we did. And of course there was church parade on Sundays.
Was that every Sunday?
Not for everybody, I don't think, no. I can't remember how it was arranged, but I can certainly remember marching down. I mean, the officers wearing medals, and well, anybody who got medals wore them. It was a ceremonial parade down to the garrison church of Blackdown. And it was really ridiculous, the whole business, on a Sunday too. And nobody wanted to go. And we did the same in Bombay. I can remember Blackdown particularly because there was a gunner regiment there, and they, of course, were senior to us, and used to come out first after the church service was over, and then have us chasing them behind with a band going at light infantry pace and having to stop for them to get on a bit. It was chaotic.
You did mention, I think, that there were a number of Roman Catholics in the
battalion. Yes, there were. I don't know what happened to them. I suppose they went off to another service somewhere else or didn't go at all. But there were Roman Catholic officers. This New Zealander I was talking about, he was one. We had a Jewish officer too, a Sebag Montefiore.
Were there any special arrangements for him in the mess, for example, for his food?
I don't think so. No, I'm damn sure there weren't, because I've seen him coming out of Paxton and Whitfield's with a pound of sausages. So I taxed him on the subject in St. James's Square.
And what did he say?
He got a little bit pinker, that's all. He took it in good heart. No, I don't think that it made much difference to him, although he belongs to a very distinguished Jewish family.
Perhaps he had a special dispensation.
Might have done.
How was it that you went to the 2nd Battalion in Bombay? Were you told you were going, or did
yes.
you volunteer?
No, I didn't volunteer. I wasn't very pleased, actually. I was enjoying Blackdown enormously. And, no, I didn't want to go. And I hated the idea of India because of the heat. And I was very happy with the people I was serving with. Very happy indeed.
You'd got well settled in.
Yes, I was in a jolly good company in a very, in those days, agreeable part of the world. I mean, Blackdown was very rural then. I'm sure it isn't now. Well, I've been to Farnborough several times in the last few years, and I couldn't hardly recognise anything. No, I was very happy with the 1st Battalion. The CO I liked. And their adjutant I liked too. Actually, they both changed very soon, and I wouldn't have liked the other two so much.
Have you any idea why they decided to send you off to India?
No, not really. I don't know if it was simply putting your finger in a hat and putting out a name, or on what grounds we were chosen. But several others, since I joined, had gone before me. And so it wasn't like joining a completely new setup. I can't remember how they did it. I think they probably retained perhaps the best games players. I wouldn't be at all surprised. This chap who demonstrated rugby tackles, he stayed behind, never went to India. And in fact, he never left, he never served in any other battalion at the first. And he went to Shanghai in 1937 when the battalion went.
How many of you went off to India then? Were you part of a large draft?
No, I went on my own. I was the only officer with a large draft of soldiers. Poor devils. There's dreadful conditions on those troop decks. It was very unpleasant being a junior officer on a troop ship in those days. I can remember the very first morning parade when we lined up on the troop decks, not on the troop decks, on the upper decks, with life-saving kit on and so to be inspected, and it was in the Bay of Biscay, and the troops were so terribly sick, it was unbelievable. They really lost all self-control. It was perfectly frightful. I wasn't seasick, but I didn't like it. And then the conditions in the troop decks in the tropics, where you had these hammocks, and everybody, the troops slept in these hammocks, and you had to go down, if you were orderly officer, you had to go down, you had to tour the whole ship once every 3 hours, and it took Dolly nearly 3 hours to do it. And the heat and the stench in those troop decks was awful. And of course, no air conditioning or anything like that, no sort of comforts for them. It was dreadful.
What time of year was this that you went
to? I left in December, and I got there just in the middle of January, I suppose it was.
Which port did you sail from?
Southampton to Bombay. We stopped at Port Said. I think that's the only time we did stop. We might have stopped at Aden, I can't remember.
So it was the canal route through?
Oh, yes. Mm.
You say the troops suffered badly on the ship.
Well, they soon got sick, used to it. Once they got into the Mediterranean, it wasn't too bad. But the Red Sea wasn't much fun, even in the middle of winter. And, of course, they were unused to really warm weather. If you've done a tour of duty in the tropics, then you probably don't find it too bad.
How did they feel about going out to India? Did you get the impression that some of them were pleased to be going?
I just think they thought, well, this is part of the bargain, and I've got to go through with it. But I can remember, actually, when we were leaving Southampton, standing on the deck, watching the Southampton floating away, I turned to the chap I was next to in the DC line and found he was in tears. He was a second lieutenant like myself. So I think a lot of people must have felt like that. I was just sort of a bit dumb, I think. I didn't relish the idea. I had to share a cabin with two other people, one of whom I disliked intensely because he used the most nauseating talcum powder which stank the place out.
What did you do with the soldiers to keep them occupied on the troop?
Well, that was really the task of the ship's commandant. It was a proper sort of training program and lots of sport and horrible things like obstacle races, which I had to take part in. I did terribly bad because I cannot climb a rope. Never been able to climb a rope. It's not a good thing I didn't go to Sandhurst. of course, the food for the officers on those ships were run by Guernese, and the catering side were run by Guernese. And we didn't realise really how jolly good and efficient they were, and all the laundry arrangements and things like that, absolutely first class. And a tremendous array of dishes available just for breakfast. You have about 10 different sorts of breakfast. And I suppose we played cards and things in the evening. They probably had horse races, you know, betting on that sort of business like one does on ships. Ordinary sort of ship's life for the officers.
What about the men? I mean, did they get decent food?
No. But in those days, I don't think the men ever did get decent food in the army. They just ate what was given to them. And if you went and asked if they were as orderly officers as one does or did, any complaints, you never got a complaint. Practically never got a complaint. And some of the stuff that was churned out for them to eat was absolutely revolting, I thought. Great lumps of gristle and fat.
Did they get acclimatised to the heat by the time they'd reached Bombay?
No, I don't think you did. And the drafts, usually, because Bombay being more or less almost the same all the year round, terribly humid, the drafts of newcomers were sent up to Deolali to be acclimatised. And I was one of them. I went up same day. to Dealali to be acclimatized. I can remember landing, when we landed, the embarkation staff officer, there was a chap in the regiment, and nice man, very nice. Looking absolutely dreadful, I thought. And that day he went down with jaundice, so he did not surprised. And I was sent off to the officer's mess in Bombay, Calaba, and given lunch. And then I went to the sort of bungalow I'd been allotted, and Batman, the bearer, said, "Now you go to sleep." And I said, "Well, I don't want to go to sleep." He said, "Well, everybody goes to sleep, so you might as well." And so I did. I never looked back about going to sleep after lunch. And that same evening, I went up to Dealali by train and was met by some of my chums who I hadn't seen since England days.
What was your first impression of India when you landed at Bombay? What did you think of it?
Horribly hot and looking rather Portuguese, I thought. Not that I'd ever been to Portugal, but true, that sort of tropical lushness, rather lots of pretty flowers and things in Bombay. And it did have a sort of course it had been Portuguese originally, and I thought I didn't like the heat at all and the humidity.
How long did you stay at Dealali?
I think most of that summer. No, perhaps not. Perhaps 3 months. But I remember I was in Bombay when the monsoon broke, and how terribly humid and dreadful it was, and so glad when the rains came. We went out of our bungalows, stripped to the waist, and let the rain pour all over us to get nice and cool. I suffered terribly from prickly heat. Then it went septic too, and it was very, very unpleasant.
What measures could you take to try and control prickly heat?
You covered yourself with some pink lotion.
Calamine lotion?
Yes, which didn't do any good at all in my case. I remember now. I had to shave under my arms, for instance, because there's awful blisters all over the place. Horrible. And eventually I got hold of some German soap made by the Bayer firm, I think, sort of antiseptic soap, I think it was. And what you did was to cover yourself with this soap and then leave it there for about half an hour. And then wipe it all off, and that seemed to have a very good effect.
In what way did it stop the itching and the pain, or did it actually reduce the blisters?
It did everything, as far as I can remember. But I think that's the only time I got prickly heat was Bombay, and several of us got it really very, very badly indeed. I was forbidden to salute because it would make me sweat. It was absurd.
Besides the prickly heat, were there other hazards to health and comfort?
No, I don't think so. No. It was just generally unpleasant all the time. Of course, there was no air conditioning. There was only one place I know of that was air conditioned, and that was a cinema. And that's where one used to go, perhaps once a week. Those days, the cinema was the only entertainment there was. There was no wireless. Nobody had a wireless set or television. And there were no theatres except the Indian ones, I suppose. So there was usually a good film every week, and that's where one went. And I used to dine out perhaps once a week with a chum at the Taj Hotel or Green's. They were about the only two restaurants, European style, that one ever went to. Until quite towards the end, the yacht club at last allowed British officers to be there as honorary members or temporary members, and that was a nice place to go to, just by the sea, and it was very nice and airy. We used to go there quite a bit. But the Bombay people, if we're on to Bombay, the civilians, what a lousy lot. You know, while we were there we had riots. We had the best football team in India, probably. A jolly good polo team. We put on a tattoo for the locals and all the rest of it. We paid calls, as one did in those days. When you joined a new setup, a new location, you paid official, your personal calls with visiting cards the Chief Justice, the Bishop, the this, that and the other, all the important people, as you did in England too in those days. And the whole of the time I was there, which is only about a year, I only once went into a civilian household, and that was a chap who was equivalent of a TA officer, who was also a businessman in Bombay, and Government House for their annual ball. Never invited to a single Bombay civilian household, and as I say, it was only about 3 months before we left India for good that we were allowed to become temporary members of the Yacht Club. They were the most unsatisfied people, I think. And really, and we behaved beautifully too. We had a band, a beautiful band, which was always being invited to play at the races and Parsi weddings and things like that. In fact, the bandmaster, I believe, was the richest member of the regiment. Huge fees for this business. It was very unsatisfying. Compared, later on, we went from there to Khartoum, where the civilians there were terribly nice. And from there, we went to Shanghai, where it was embarrassing. They began calling on the mess before we disembarked from the ship. And there had to be an officer detailed to stay in the mess every evening to receive callers. They're immensely friendly. But Bombay, not a bit. I'm told Calcutta was much nicer, but I never went there.
Was it possible to make calls or receive calls from any of the native population?
I'm sure it was possible. I don't think anybody ever did. Except perhaps in Deir Lali, where the detachment commander was also chairman of the municipal something or other, I mean, equivalent to mayor, I suppose. And he was an official position, and he got on. When he left, this particular one I'm thinking of, the Indians sort of gave a terrific party for him, and we were all asked to that. But there was no contact at all. And simply, it was not done, I'm afraid, really. It was very bare, but one was simply didn't realise they were there, practically. We knew nothing about India. And we weren't ever told much about India either. There was certainly no encouragement to learn a language. On the other hand, the battalion had been serving in India for upwards of 20 years, I think. And there were a few who had been there all the time and refused posting home because they liked it. And there were very few officers who spoke Urdu. A few, but not many. And then really sort of kitchen Urdu, I suspect. It wasn't very good, you know, but they were.
What were your relations with your bearer like?
Oh, very friendly. I had my first one was a Mohammedan, and he didn't last very long, although I liked him, and he wanted to go home, and did, up to Punjab. And then for a very short time, I had another one who was Kit McGar and the Mayors. And he was quite hopeless. He wasn't up to it at all. He kept on forgetting everything. He had no brain whatsoever, so I quickly got rid of him and had finished out with a Hindu, which was very unusual. And his only fault was that he was too vain to wear his glasses. But he was a first-class servant.
What did the troops actually do while they were in Dulali? Did they do any training?
Oh, yes, it was all training. We trained damn hard there. It wasn't a comfort station or anything like that. No, it was just the same as in Bombay, doing all the same sort of things, but in a much nicer climate.